You're listening to UnConcast on the Georgia Podcast Network, featuring unconference sessions and other related discussions from around the Southeast.
So, hello everybody.
Hello.
Hello.
Howdy. Hey, Les.
Hey, Poggle.
Hey. Hey, Brown Coat.
Yes.
Yeah, Les does the Signal podcast, which is the best Firefly podcast out there.
Firefly
was a science fiction show.
Oh,
it was very, very good.
Sci-fi western.
Sci-fi western.
Yeah, the world.
Oh, that had to be weird.
The world was not ready for it. It got canceled before its time.
Go to SerenityFirefly.com to learn more about it.
Yeah.
The only sci-fi show ever without aliens.
What? Is that possible?
Great War.
Anyway.
No aliens.
Yeah. Okay. Today's topic for this session is better sound with the gear you have. Obviously, that's going to be somewhat general because I have no idea what gear you have. And it's going to be different for everybody. Yeah, one of the best ways to get a heated conversation going on among podcasters is ask, so what's your rig? What do you record with? And people love to argue about this stuff and brag about this stuff. But I'm a firm believer that when you're getting started, if you spent hundreds and hundreds of dollars before you got started podcasting, then your priorities are all wrong because you have no idea if you're going to continue with it longer than a couple of months. And also, you want to give yourself an upgrade path. The first year that I did Skatepod, this is my podcast, it's a science fiction podcast. If you like short stories, come check it out. My bookmarks are delicious, so yeah, pick up several. And for the first year, I was doing it with a Shure SM57 microphone. It's actually, that exact microphone is down at the podium right now. That I had sitting around the house. And a fairly cheap little USB audio interface, and I just did it in a corner of my living room. And I managed to get pretty good sound out of that with Audacity, which is the free sound editor, open source. I don't have anything to put the URL. Just Google on Audacity, and it'll be the first thing that comes up. If they're not talking about Attitude. I spent very, very little money. Then around Christmas time that year, I kind of splurged because I'd actually been making a little bit of money with my podcast, so I was able to put it back in and get some better gear. But there are a lot of things you can do with room design, with just better microphone technique, and with learning to use the effects and the features of the software you already have. So that's what I wanted to talk about. I want to give a few high-level topics first, and then we'll kind of open it up and make this a conversation. The major things that really hang people up, the bugbears of any kind of audio, are reverb, noise, and mic placement. And these are all things that you can fix for free or almost free, just by paying attention to where your microphone is and where you are in relation to your microphone. And these will work with really cheap microphones. These will work with really expensive microphones. If you're using a headset mic, then obviously mic placement is a pretty easy thing to solve because your microphone's right there. It's an inch from your mouth. And that's one advantage of headsets. If you have a studio microphone, like on your desk, then you got to pay a little bit more attention to where you're speaking. Unfortunately, the microphone I was going to use is downstairs on that podium, so I don't have anything to demonstrate unless someone's got a microphone that you want me, spitting into. Oh, there you go. Yes. The big thing about it, a lot of people are way too far from their microphones if you want to get a good clear sound. Your microphone should be close enough that your spouse gets jealous. It's probably about 3 to 8 inches from your mouth is a good distance for most decent studio microphones. And it really depends on what you have your level set at, that sort of thing. But definitely, if it's more than a foot away from you, then you're going to pick up less of your sound, and then you're going to have to bring up the volume more, which means you're going to bring up all the background noise of the room and, you know, of your sound equipment. Everything you plug into your audio chain is going to have some kind of hiss to it. Everything makes electrical noise. Some of it's very, very low. Some of it's large. Yeah, some of it's louder. But, you know, if your mouth is close enough to the microphone, then you're so much louder than that noise that it becomes much less significant. So be very close to your microphone. Placement is also important in terms of a lot of, you've probably heard popping in other people's podcasts. And that's when you make pee sounds as you're speaking into the, and doing your podcast. When your lips, especially with pee sounds, B sounds, there's an explosion of air that comes out of your mouth. And if your microphone is right here and there's nothing between you and the microphone, then that explosion of air is going to hit the diaphragm on your microphone, and it's going to be picked up as that really loud popping sound. It's far louder than anything else. The easiest way to fix that is to get yourself a pop filter. And you can go to Guitar Center and buy them for $15. Some people make their own out of, like, you can, like, just wire a coat hanger into a circle and just run pantyhose across that. But basically the idea is to have some kind of barrier, just some wind barrier between you and the microphone that's going to catch that air and stop that air from making that loud pee sound. I should have brought that thing with me, and I didn't. Google on pop filters. They're easy to buy and they're easy to make. Or you can just put a windscreen over your microphone, depending on the style of microphone that it is. But pop filters do work better than that. Reverb is also a problem. If you really listen closely, we're trained not to notice it in live situations, but if you listen to my voice, there's kind of an echo in this room. This is because this room is very boxy, and I'm sitting on one end of it, and my sound is carrying off and bouncing off of those lovely pictures on the far wall over there, and that big flat wall, and it's coming right back at me. Then it's bouncing off this square wall over here, then it's bouncing back again. Boxy rooms are the enemy of podcasting. And if you get yourself a good microphone and a good set of headphones and you record yourself in a nice square or rectangular room, you're going to hear a lot of reverb. It sounds great in rock music. It can be really distracting if it's covering over your voice. And luckily, there are a lot of things you can do with that. If you want to spend a little bit of money into it, you can actually put padding over your walls. Basically, turning the wall into a softer surface and not this hard, flat surface can do a lot to cut down on that reverb. You can buy actual acoustic foam padding if you want to spend a lot of money and, you know, impress all your friends with your kick-ass podcast studio.
Egg cartons? I think I've seen.
Yeah, you can do eggshell kinds of foam. You can buy that stuff at Home Depot, and it's really not expensive.
Hanging curtains like these would
do. Yeah, hanging curtains or blankets over the wall. A lot of people just, you got a bunch of quilts laying around the house. Hang them on your walls. Before you record, and that will actually do a huge amount to cut down on your reverb. You can also do some things with placement. This is the worst possible thing for reverb, of being facing the wall directly. If you actually, like, turn your desk so it's kind of at a diagonal, so you're talking into the corner, then that can actually do a fair bit. It won't cut down, it won't kill all your reverb, but it'll help. Some people even put pillows around their microphone, or they make themselves a little padded box and kind of speak into that. If you're really comfortable doing that, then, go for it. My room at home, I managed to solve a lot of audio problems. I moved my podcast studio, quote unquote, down into my basement. There's an unfinished room in my basement. It's really a long storage room, but one wall of it is just pure fiberglass. It's just raw insulation. And so I have my microphone facing there. I stand facing that fiberglass wall. I have no reverb. This is a nice long room, so there's not a lot of walls to reflect off each other, and what I'm facing doesn't reflect back. Because it's just that Pink Panther, soft stuff. Look around your house or your apartment and figure out what you can do creatively to cut down on that. Some people even go into their closet and record their podcast there with coats hanging all over the place. It's kind of dark. If you're claustrophobic, that's not going to work for you. But you're not going to have any reverb issues. So that's the big thing with reverb. Noise is the other enemy of audio. As I said, all electrical equipment has noise, and if you're using cheaper mixers and cheaper microphones, you're going to have some. My advice is not to stress about that too much, because just the pure electrical noise, even from fairly low-end gear, is not going to be so loud and so distracting that it's going to annoy the crap out of your listeners. What can is if you have the air conditioner running and your microphone's right next to your vent, or you're right by your kitchen and the fridge is really loud. Yeah, listen to your podcast and figure out what it is that's making the noises that you hear, and see if you can move your system away from that. I always turn off the furnace and the air conditioner in my house when I'm podcasting. It also gives me a time limit before my wife decides that our child is going to die of exposure. But it makes things very quiet. If I didn't, my boiler room is right next to that unfinished room in the basement, so I'd be screwed. I've listened to podcasts where it's obvious that the person had a fish tank in the same room with them. I was like, wow, that's a 55-gallon, I think. And so pay attention to that stuff. Computer noise is a real problem because most of us are recording direct to our computers. And if your computer is the $500 Best Buy special, those things were not made to be quiet. Those computers are very loud. And the more powerful your computer is, the more it sounds like a jet engine. And that is a real problem if that's your podcasting computer. Even laptops these days, when you have them plugged in, they can be kind of loud. They're not as loud as desktop machines. The only thing you can really do about that, you can try and get a quiet PC. Just, again, Google on silent PC and you'll find all kinds of special fans that you can buy for your computer to make it quieter and quieter power supplies and things if you want to drop some money into it. The cheap way is just to get that computer away from the microphone. Buy yourself a longer microphone cable, and some people even podcast in a different room from where the computers are. Just run the microphone cable into the door. That certainly solves the problem. My machine that I record on, I don't do much else with it, but I have a Mac Mini. And I love that thing. It's my first Macintosh. Is like a $400 little box, but it's the quietest machine I've ever had. And I actually stick that in a box underneath the table where I'm podcasting, so you really can't hear the thing when you're talking. But just think about it. Be creative. If you can't get your computer away too far enough, put some blankets around it or something. I mean, don't let it overheat. But you find a way to get your computer directly away from your microphone. So those are all fairly simple things that you can do to improve the general quality of your sound. There will be cases where you have noise that you can't do anything about with physical environment stuff, especially if you have a mobile show. If you're doing portable recording, you go into events like this. I turned off the fan on that projector there, but if I was doing the projector, that fan noise would be something I'd want to do something about. Your audio programs, Audacity, and pretty much anything that's more expensive than Audacity, they all have noise reduction effects, noise reduction features. Just look in the menus on your software and see if it's got something for noise reduction. And the way that works is that you find some segment of your file, like 5 seconds of your file, that just has the noise and doesn't have anybody talking, and you set that as your noise print. It does kind of a frequency analysis of that stuff, and then you say reduce the noise on the entire file, and it tries to isolate that sound out and remove it from the rest of the file. And this works with varying degrees of effectiveness. I am not a big fan of relying on noise reduction too much. If you can do things like turn off your air conditioning and stuff, that's much better, because it's better to not have the noise in the first place. If you do too much noise reduction on your files, it always sounds a little weird. You start getting that kind of robot effect if you overdo it, where everybody's voice sounds a little bit modulated. And it can sound weird. So don't overdo the noise reduction. Try to be quiet if you can. There are times when you really can't, and it's always better to have the words out and have something clear that people can hear than to, not do anything at all. There's a lot of other effects in Audacity that I'm a fan of. Compression. Is anyone familiar with compression in a sound context? This is not like using zip to like zip up your files and things. It's a very different usage of the word. Compression is, in an audio context, is trying to make all of the sound in your podcast the same basic volume. And the way it works is that it takes the quieter sounds. Somebody's talking like this into the microphone. Then 5 seconds later, they start shouting into it. If someone's listening in their car to your podcast, that's going to drive them nuts. because, you know, this is too quiet. I'm going to turn up the volume. Then you start shouting again, and they have to turn it down again to, yeah, before the eardrums get blown out. And they're trying to hear your stuff over traffic. You really want to have a consistent volume level in your podcast. And if you can train yourself to always speak at the same general volume, that's great. It does take time, and it does take experience. And even then, you know, there's going to be some, you know, some dramatic effect in your voice, where some things will be louder than others. And the compression effect is designed to equalize that a bit by taking the quieter sounds, raising the volume of it takes the louder sounds, reduces the volume of the louder sounds, so that then you can bring the whole thing back up. And it's called compression because it compresses the dynamic range of your file. It compresses the volume range so that the quieter sounds and the louder sounds are in a narrower range of variation. And Audacity has a pretty good compression effect. Basically, you set a threshold of, like, you know, anything that's louder than minus 15 decibels. And I'm not going to go too much into the whole decibel theory here. But anything that's louder than that level, I want to bring the volume down on it at a 3-to-1 ratio. And so, you know, the more you set those things, the higher the ratio, the more compressed it's going to get, the narrower the range. It can start to sound really fake and really forced and like pop radio if you do it too much. Yeah, I mean, rock music these days, listen to any top 40 song, and they compress the hell out of it so that there's no difference between the quieter parts of the song and the louder parts of the song. And if you make everything exactly the same volume, then you really can lose a lot of the energy of your podcast. You can lose some of the passion of it and the emotional effect. So don't overdo this stuff, but you do want to make things loud enough so that people can hear what you're doing. There's a great tool just came out late last year called the Levelator, which does a lot of this automatically for you. Again, just Google it. It's a free tool, and you just drag your sound file into it, and it takes everything, and it kind of brings it up to the same volume range.
Excuse me, how do you spell that?
Levelator.
Okay, thank you. You should only use it with voice, though.
If you do it with music, you can make things sound kind of weird. And also, you want to make sure your noise level is not too high before you do it, because it'll also bring all the noise up to the same volume as everything else if for stretches that don't have your voice.
Yeah, I found that if you're doing anything with trying to reduce noise, you'll want to do that before trying to do anything else, because if you do anything else like compression that will adjust your volume levels, that'll adjust the underlying background noise. Yeah. It's harder to remove it when it's no longer constant.
I don't use it for my main podcast because I do story readings, and you actually want to have some good volume variation when people are doing story readings. However, for things like this recording that I'm doing right now, I'll probably run this through the Levelator, so when Les is talking at the far end there, it's going to sound as loud as me talking much closer to this microphone. So it's a really handy tool for that, and it's free, so you don't have anything to lose by downloading it and trying it and seeing if it makes your podcast sound better. Those are the main tools that I recommend playing with in Audacity, are compression and noise reduction if you need it. You'll find a lot of other effects. You'll find reverb effects. Podcasters can overuse the hell out of reverb. You don't need to make yourself sound like Ziggy Stardust in order to attract an audience. Yes, ma'am.
If you're using, this is just for anybody, that if you're using GarageBand, you can use the Levelator, but there's a trick that you need to know, and that is before you export your file, the Levelator requires that you have either a WAV file or a AIFF file. It doesn't work on MP3, because that would make everything just complete crap. So normally when you export a GarageBand file to iTunes, you have an AAC file. In order to get it in the AIFF format, what you have to do is all you have to do is hide the podcast track. Simple. Mm-hmm. Click on hide podcast track, and it will come up in iTunes as an AIFF. Then all you got to do is drag it onto your desktop and stick it in the Levelator.
Yeah.
There's been a lot of discussion on that on the Levelator forums of how you do that, and it's really simple once you know how.
Yeah, GarageBand is it's a great sound program, and if you have a Mac, it's free on every Macintosh, and yeah, people love it, and there's a lot of great podcast features in GarageBand nowadays. It does work kind of weird in terms of getting the files out of it, because you can't just save straight to a sound file out of it. You have to go through iTunes first, because Apple wants to, you have to be part of the whole Apple experience. So you have to round trip it through iTunes before you can, and then drag it from iTunes onto your desktop before you have a file that you can then turn into something else. So yeah, exactly.
Because I couldn't find a better way to do it. Mm-hmm. I'm sure there must be a better way to do it.
Unfortunately, no. No.
Well, and because basically those features are in iTunes, and instead of duplicating them in GarageBand, because the thing that makes GarageBand, to my mind, a good program to use is the fact that it is integrated with the other parts, especially mm-hmm. taking things like your photos and mm-hmm. sticking them right into your podcast and stuff like
yeah.
that. But I think they just... There's no reason to duplicate that feature that was already in
yeah.
iTunes.
Yeah. GarageBand also, by default, if you set up a podcast project in GarageBand, it's going to make Apple's proprietary format for podcasts. They call it Enhanced Podcast Format, which has some really neat features. You can drag pictures, in, like you just said, into it, and yeah, they'll show up if people are watching it on their iPods. And you can like put embed bookmarks into it, and you know, do chapter stops and things. There are some really neat things about the Enhanced Podcasts. The problem with it is that they only play in iTunes and on iPods. Mm-hmm. And iPod is by far the market leader, but they're not the only MP3 players out there. And you don't want to lose the rest of your audience. So even if you are making those Enhanced Podcasts, you should be making MP3 files as well, because everyone in the world can play an MP3 file. There's no other format that plays on every device out there.
Just to follow up on that, I was just going to mention, because I did a podcast using GarageBand and then had to find an application to convert the AAC to MP3. So I use Switch,
okay.
which can convert AAC to pretty much any other format.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. But iTunes will convert it for you.
Yeah, if you like you said, make your enhanced file first, then delete that podcast track or hide that podcast track, then it'll go in as an AIFF file instead of the AAC file.
You know, even if you have it in an AAC format, when you mm-hmm. get ready, you don't have to hide the podcast track mm-hmm. for that, because the podcast track, if you're not making an enhanced podcast, all it contains is your logo.
Okay.
And so once you've got your podcast in iTunes, you've mm-hmm. exported it from GarageBand into iTunes, then all you do is you go on under the advanced menu and you convert to MP3. Now you do have to make sure that you've changed the settings away. It's under the import, the way you import music, which you normally would have on really high settings. So you'd have to change them down to a lower quality so your file doesn't end up huge.
Yeah.
But once you've done that, it's easy.
Okay.
And
Switch
it's already
worked well too.
Yeah.
I mean, that was easy enough to convert
That's
it.
Cool.
Yep. The nice thing about iTunes is it's easy then to fix your ID3 tags inside iTunes.
What formats would you recommend?
In terms of like settings for your MP3 file?
No, what formats? MP3. I mean, if you wanted to provide them in multiple formats, what?
Well, like I said, MP3 you should always be providing, because otherwise you're going to lock somebody out with the other formats. If you want. I only put out an MP3. I don't play around with multiple formats for mine. I never saw enough value in it to put the work into making enhanced files. If you want to do that, that's fine. Most people who do that, then you have two podcast feeds. You have your MP3 feed, which is on your website. Then your enhanced feed is the one you can list in iTunes, because if they're using iTunes, then they can play that. For audio, I don't see a reason to have more than that. I mean, there's no reason to make a Windows media file or something, because you're not going to gain anything out of it versus your MP3 file. Huh?
Half the size.
Yeah, and these days, is there anyone who's really killed by having to download a 15 meg audio file?
No,
these days?
There's people who don't have a large amount of space on their player.
Yeah.
Like me.
Okay. Yeah.
I think
that as the technology curve continues to expand. You know, the folks who only have like 256 meg MP3 players and things, that market is really shrinking, and more and more the devices you can buy have more and more space on them, and podcast files versus the size of people's music libraries. You know, it's not that. Yeah, you know, I'm subscribed to a lot of podcasts, and they take up a really tiny part of my iPod. So, I'm not an iPod snob or anything. I'm not going to say that it's the only device people should buy. But, yeah, you have to be sensitive to file size. But, you know, then you have to worry about explaining to your listeners that you have three different formats. And if you're using this device, subscribe to this one. And if you're using this one, subscribe to this one. And if you're using this, go over here instead and go to this link. And I find that the complexity of having to explain that to people who aren't necessarily technical users in the first place, you just want people to listen to your podcast. You don't want to have to, you know, give them an education in computer science just to get them to be able to listen. So I find it simpler to just say, here's my MP3 file. You're right, the other formats do sound better at lower size, and that is true. I personally don't think that that's valuable enough to risk the risk confusing people.
An alternate view of that is I get really frustrated when they only have MP3s.
Okay. and that's fair. That's
and
fair.
Would like to see more Windows Metafile formats.
Okay.
An approach to not confuse them is just make it simple to get to MP3s and complicated to get to the advanced files.
Mm-hmm.
And the people who understand it
mm-hmm.
will go through the advanced route to find them.
Mm-hmm.
Like me, I'll go looking for it.
Okay.
And that way you don't have to worry about confusing.
Okay. Cool. Yeah.
There's a podcast that I know of that does they do two MP3 versions of it, one at 64 kbit and 128 kbit. That's the Mad Music show that comes out once a week.
Dignation does
yeah.
the same thing with their video.
I know there's a few radio theater podcasts too that, like, the one they give away is their, like, low-end mono 64K file, and then they sell, you know, either on CD format or, like, for, you know, a couple bucks a download or something, they sell their higher quality one. I'm not sure how well that works as a business model. I don't know if it's really succeeding for them, but I know that there are people trying that. So, any other questions or issues people are having with sound quality? I mean, this is meant to be a conversation.
We're having an issue. We have a fitness 1 hour fitness podcast, and it's called Dr. Fitness and Fat Guy. And what happens is
that's a cool name.
What's it called?
Dr. Fitness and the Fat Guy?
Yeah. And what happens is people are listening to it while they exercise, so they're listening like on an MP3 player on, you know, kind of bad
mm-hmm.
headphones at a high volume, and
mm-hmm.
we get some complaints about sound.
Yeah. But as I said, that's where compression is really your friend. Yeah, I mean, they're going to listen at whatever volume they set the devices at, but what you want to make sure is that you don't have stretches of soft, you know, soft sound and then stretches of loud sound. Together. And something like the Levelator for yours might actually be a good... Well, do you do a lot of music, or is it pretty much
just talking?
Yeah, the Levelator would be a good idea. Give it a try. And then it also brings everything up to what they think is the right... Yeah, a good, proper, professional podcast level. And I don't want to get too much into the esoterica of, you know, RMSDB settings and things like that. But... the big thing is play with your sound tools. Play with Audacity. Play with those compressor effects. Play with all the effects, because you can always undo it. Yeah, save it to a different file before you go and try and break things too much. But you're not gonna destroy your computer by trying every effect and every menu option in this stuff. The more you learn it, the more you understand what it can do. Oh, and my other advice: if you spend any money on your podcast at all, invest in a good pair of headphones. I'm a true believer in good headphones. The $100 I spent on my Sennheiser headphones is some of the best money I've spent on my podcast, because you can't really tell how much noise you have in your podcast or what sound artifacts you're trying to edit out if you can't hear them clearly to begin with. And the $30 Best Buy headphones, or the ones that came with your iPod, you're not going to be able to clearly hear what's in your podcast. And so... Yeah, you know, $100 pair of studio quality headphones, you can hear everything. I mean, I could hear God sneeze in my podcast. with those things. And so I swear by those. And again, I know this is better sound with the gear you have, but the next time you start thinking about spending money, I tell people, before you buy a better microphone, buy a better headphone so you know how much better that new microphone is. Yeah, if you're listening on the same old stuff, you won't necessarily be able to tell the difference.
Is that a USB microphone you have?
I use a FireWire mixer myself. I've kind of become a high-end audio snob, but I didn't start as one.
What microphones do you recommend?
At the low end, as I said, the $40 Logitech USB headset is a pretty good one. I'm a fan of USB microphones if you can, just because then it doesn't matter if your sound card is good or bad. And most sound cards that come with your computer are pretty bad for input. So $40 USB like Logitech headsets. Samson makes an $80 USB studio microphone that sounds really, really good for an $80 microphone, and it plugs directly into your computer, so you don't need any other equipment. It just, Audacity recognizes it, all your sound software will recognize it as a device on your computer, and you just start talking into it, and you don't have to have any other gear at all. If you get good studio microphones, the problem with those is then you also need a mixer, or you need a preamp. A good microphone is not designed to plug straight into your computer. You have to have something that'll power it up and bring the levels up first. And yeah. So you have to start spending real money.
My next question was, was there somewhat of a low-cost mixer that had a USB mm-hmm. out, but you know,
yeah.
had the basic traditional mixer function?
The most recommended one that I know about for that has USB out is Alesis makes one. And I think the USB mixer is like $150 now or something. Does anyone know? Anyone know? It's like the Alesis USB 8 or something. And it's a good mixer. I mean, it's got good microphone amplifiers in it. It sounds quite good.
And it does
a stereo USB out. They make a slightly more expensive FireWire one where every microphone goes into its own sound channel into your computer, which if you have a lot of different people talking, that could be valuable. Starting out, I think just getting a stereo sound or even a mono sound into your computer is just fine. But yeah, that's the best affordable USB mixer that I know about. I don't think I can get cheaper than that. Not for a mixer. And I don't want to go too much into mixers here because you can get really complex. We did an episode of Podholes a couple weeks ago. If you go to podholes.com, you can hear me. It's like we call it car talk for podcasting. And it's me and another high-end sound guy that really thinks you should spend $10,000 on a studio. We argue with each other about this stuff there. And it's a lot of fun. And we did a thing entirely about how to hook up your mixers and things if you really want to know. Other questions? I don't know how we're doing on time.
Go ahead. As far as pop filters, are those primarily just for desktop mounts or are there ones for headsets? Because I have a headset mm-hmm. mic, and what will happen is as I'm recording my podcast, the mic will mm-hmm. start going into my mouth. if I'm really talking about mm-hmm. something, I can hear those
yeah.
pops.
I imagine no one else wants to use your microphone after that.
Is there something like that for headset mics? Or?
Yeah, well, you can't, like, a whole hoop-shaped pop filter is not going to fit in that half inch of space between you and your microphone. But what you can do, go to Radio Shack, and they'll sell, like, little windscreens that you can fit over those tiny little microphones. I think you can spend $2, I think, on just a little microphone windscreen. Put that over it, and that should sound just fine. Most of those little electronic, like the USB headsets and things, those are designed to be like noise-canceling mics in the first place. So they do a pretty good job of cutting out a lot of the popping and stuff already. But if you need more than that, either do that or just wrap a sock around it or something. You know, no one's looking at you while you're podcasting. You don't have to look good.
I'm using Audio Hijack Pro to capture my Skype conversations. I've gotten myself confused when it comes to trying to record separate channels.
I would actually ask on the Audio Hijack forums on that because I don't know. I haven't done enough Skype interviews myself. If anyone else has advice.
Audio Hijack?
Yeah, Audio Hijack Pro. It's a Mac program that can like record any sound from any software on your Mac. And yeah, Skype is a great way to do interviews because it's really, really cheap. And yeah, it doesn't do its own recording, so you have to find another program to record.
Gizmo records, though.
Yeah, Gizmo was another popular... Well, it's becoming more popular now. It's an open source competitor to Skype.
If you're using Skype, Hot Recorder is good for
mm-hmm.
recording.
Oh, he said it's open source.
Yeah. What's the equivalent to the Audio Hijack Pro for the PC?
What he said, Hot Recorder is a good one for recording Skype. Yeah.
Okay.
And none of the good ones I know about are free, but they're not too expensive either. We're talking
like
$30-$40.
Hot Recorder, I think, is $15.
Oh. Yeah. Cool. Yeah. So, okay. Anyone else have any experiences of good things, good ways that you've managed to improve your sound?
Well, I mentioned one more microphone, good for portable, okay. is the Giant Squid.
Oh,
I
yes.
I several people that have them. I have mine. Yes.
This is why they call it the Giant Squid, if anyone wants to know. Yeah, no, these are, these little lapel mics. This is what I plug into my iRiver when I'm recording.
Oh.
It's like, there's one guy in the Midwest that makes these things. These are custom microphones. And I got this stereo microphone cost me like $60, but it is the clearest microphone for this tiny little size that I've ever heard.
So how does that work?
You clip it to your shirt or whatever, and you plug this. It's just Nathan, you plug this into your microphone adapter port.
Oh.
Yeah, if your laptop has a mic port, it won't go into a...
Gotcha.
Yeah. Or like my iRiver, I plug this into that.
Good.
The only problem with Giant Squid Audio Labs is they don't have a logo or a t-shirt. Anything like that would be great.
Because he's white. Well, he doesn't need it, I think, because he gets so much publicity, and he is just one guy. So.
And you say it's a giant squid audio labs.
Yeah. Yeah, again, Google's your friend on all this stuff. This is, I've stopped bothering to give a lot of URLs because I figure if you remember the name, then you can find it.
Well, that's why I actually say yes.
Are there any advantages to recording in this area for just speaking?
Is it just you?
Just one person?
Just one person? No. No, there's no advantage. If you have more than one person and you want to get a sense of the room, then there can be a, then stereo can be nice. But it, just you, all your sound is coming out of one point source, your mouth. So, yeah, unless your mouth's going to be moving around and that's part of the effect. Yeah. I'm wandering around my room. This is my room cast. No, it doesn't really hit. There's not much. There's really no advantage. I do suggest encoding your MP3 file in stereo, or specifically joint stereo anyway, and that's only because there are some MP3 players that don't work well. They don't play well with mono MP3 files. Some it'll only come out of one channel, and for a while, iPods even had a bug where mono MP3 files would sometimes cause your iPod to crash. And yeah, I got a lot of emails from listeners about that. Like, I have no idea. Then I eventually found out. Okay, thanks, Apple.
Yeah, I didn't know that too. You said something.
Yeah, so record your MP3 file. If you do it in joint stereo, your file's not any bigger. A mono MP3 and a stereo MP3 at the same bit rate is going to be the same size. So you don't lose any file size doing it. It's just a matter of sound quality. And with joint stereo, it's exactly the same quality either way. So...
I have just a suggestion, something I learned the hard way. If you're planning to do a lot of interviews, like on-site interviews at a conference or something like that, or even sitting down somewhere and doing an interview, it's really important to use two mics. The first one I did, I had one mic, and we did the whole back and forth. And you really lost a lot in the pause and the natural flow of the conversation with someone picking up a mic and getting comfortable and holding it. You know, so getting someone comfortable in a position, each of you, and holding the mic and having the discussion gives you much more natural sound.
Yeah, very good point. This is good for that too. I actually done interviews where like, yeah, I have this one clipped to me, and then like, yeah, I'm doing like this at the other person. If I'm just doing like, yeah, live, well, yeah, person on the spot interviews and things, you look like a goofball holding this tiny little thing on somebody's face, but it picks up good sound. So you know, get two full size microphones. You look very professional if you have one of those nice boom mics.
You know, you can make it like a cardboard tube on one end and sort of make it look like a regular mic.
So do you have two inputs on your iRiver then?
Yeah. Well, the iRiver will record in stereo. I mean, right now, I just spent a little bit more money on this Zoom thing.
Is that one output for the two microphones? That's what I was
talking about. Yeah, no, it's a stereo microphone.
Oh, okay.
So one of these is left channel, one of these is right channel.
Oh, okay.
So, yeah.
Will that fit into the digital?
Yeah, this fits in my iRiver just fine.
When you publish that, do you mix it so that the voices don't go back and forth between the channels?
Depends. Sometimes you actually want that effect. But yeah, again, get good headphones and listen to it and decide for yourself, because Audacity, all these sound editors will let you move the left channel and the right channel around and bring them together and that sort of thing. Again, play with your software and you can get some interesting effects. Don't overdo the effects. You want it to sound natural. But I just got this thing, which, you know, it isn't really a better sound with cheap gear thing, because this cost me $300. But I splurged. It's a Zoom H4 is what it's called. And it's got those little microphones at the top, really good stereo microphones there. And it has microphone inputs at the bottom as well, so I can plug in two good XLR microphones into it. I'm kind of I just got it a week ago, so this is my big experiment to see how well it turns out. Listen to the podcasts as they go up on the podcast feed, and you'll find out if this thing's any good. And I recorded the one this morning, the Podcasting 101, with my iRiver, so you can kind of compare and contrast. Any other questions, comments, fun things? I think it's lunchtime, and I hate to hold people back from that.
Thank you. The song you heard in this podcast was Garden by Cargo Cult, available only on Magnatune.com. Thanks for listening to Unconcast on the Georgia Podcast Network. If you have recorded or are planning to record a discussion that you think would make a good episode of Unconcast, email us at info@gapodcastnetwork.com to learn how you can submit it.